Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live. Live. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life broadcast for Wednesday, December the 4th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hi, Michael. Good to be here.
Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. And of course, we'll start with our abbreviated 9 principles of belief. And those are 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. And for tonight's topic, we're going to dive right in. It's exploring the human drive to create. So,
you know, I was thinking about that topic before the program, like before we hooked up tonight, Michael. We can go in a lot of different directions with this topic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, as with all interesting things, there's more than just one motivation for anything, right?
Yes, exactly.
It's going to be different for every human being. But this is such an interesting topic because we do, I mean, almost universally, we as a species have this innate desire to create. And that can be different things to different people. Some people like to create ideas, you know. Some people like to create buildings, architecture, art. Some people like to create systems and, you know, bring people together and create organizations. But it is a drive that is universal. So I think an interesting question, is it specific to humanity, or do you think it's universal to anything that has a higher consciousness?
Well, I think it's based on need, too, I think. If there's a requirement, you get clever about it. First, I agree. I think we're all spiritually here to create. That's my personal take on it. But I think that our level of creativity and curiosity is largely based on need and what need that is. You know, Maslow's hierarchy would say, you know, food and shelter first, you know, and then working your way up.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, it's interesting. Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs, I think should be noted that even he said that it's kind of a fluid scale and things intermingle and mix. But one thing that I find fascinating is there's a lot of legitimacy to that hierarchy of needs, that you need to first have your base needs met before you can move on to anything that's a higher level creativity, etc. But at the same time, you can look back far back to early, early human history and see examples of art in the form of, you know, cave paintings and, you know, markings and things, of sculptures, tens of thousands of years ago, music, flutes, tens of thousands of years ago, in an era where it was a daily challenge to exist. We didn't have the even relative modern conveniences of early civilization and agriculture circa 6,000 years ago. They still had the hunter-gathering process, so every day was a struggle, every, you know, day was about survival, yet they took the time to create music, to create art, to leave something of themselves behind, to try to perhaps explain those things that exist in the abstract, through artistic creation, that is, those things that exist in the abstract that can't truly be, they can't be relayed with words. Words don't do it justice. I mean, verbal language, as wonderful as it is, and as many gifts as it's given us as a species to communicate, to evolve, to learn from one another, in some ways it's still rather primitive. And, well, in the sense that when it comes to trying to communicate a feeling, an idea, well, let's ask this. Let's talk about the creation of abstract art. So I'll put it out there. Where does that come from?
I had a funny there for you, and I bit my tongue. But I'm with you, Michael. I think that where does that come from? That, and let's just call it abstract creativity for a moment, you know, aside from need, et cetera. But that Dr. Matt says in the chat room, instinct and the impetus of evolution is the most efficient route to entropy. It exists in all living things, and it's the creation of a system. Well, that's interesting. And he said he doesn't believe it's unique to humanity at all. And so I think that's kind of in keeping the creation of a system, like that need to, where do thoughts and energy and abstract ideas, pictures, sounds in your head, you know, all those other things, where do they come from? Right. And that need to express it somehow.
And I think that he's absolutely correct. I don't think it's, well, we know it's for a fact that it's not localized only to human beings, to Homo sapiens. We know that Neanderthals, Cro-Magnon man, and other different, our ancestors, earlier version of what we would become, they also had artistic drive, and different hominid species that no longer exist, they've gone extinct, they had an artistic drive. I think they've even, and this is me vaguely referencing some things I think I saw, so take it with a grain of salt, this part. I think I've seen some studies of art with animals, have I not? With, you know, perhaps elephants, great apes?
Yep. Absolutely. There's lots of animals that have, you give them the tools and something instructional, and they go, oh, and they're all over it. It's really fascinating. I think it is in lots of life forms to want to create, but again, the tools within. So if we provide a tool, then that expands that consciousness and that need to create. Because then I think it becomes a need, a real desire. Because you can't make an animal do a painting. That would
True.
Be like, I don't want to. Like a cat. No, I don't want to. But there has to be that desire to even do it. Not just a desire to please, because you don't know what it is you're doing that's pleasing anybody except everything is good. And so you want to keep doing that. So maybe there is a bit of reward somehow in there with animals. But I think you're absolutely right. It's you know, where were we? It's just that inside of us and lots of life forms that we want to – I believe that's why we're here. I know there's that cliche saying of we're all here to learn. I figure we've – you know, we're always learning. I mean, but once we beam into the onto the planet and you figure out, oh, there's microwaves here. How do you use those? You know, oh, we have refrigeration. You're learning what's here, and then we get about the business of contributing and creating. And I think, if I can tie it back to the very beginning of what you were saying, Michael, is the need to tell a story. You know, whether that's paintings on the cave wall, you know, to through, you know, the glyphs of actions is how you tell a story. It may not be a language like we know English, but it's a language of pictures to tell a story. Mm-hmm. So we all want to tell a story somehow.
Absolutely, and I think we want to be understood as well. And I think that's what that... Well, let's take architecture for an example. It doesn't need to be creative to be functional.
Exactly.
But yet we do. It becomes an expression of a person, a culture, a society. And to another point that Greg has made in chat, that we create to solve problems we face... solutions vary from imitation to originality. And I think that's a great point because let's look at the creation of fiction. I think there's an old adage that says artists use lies to tell the truth and politicians use truth to tell lies. And there's there's some element of truth to that because especially a literary artist, they will create fiction to tell a truth of human existence, and that shares that that life experience in a way. Of telling the story, you gain experience and a perspective that you can share with other human beings. And interesting thing, when we factor in how fiction and things coincide and correlate with human social evolution and cultural evolution, and in that... It prepares us for, like, for example, science fiction. It's preparing us for how to conceive of a world that we're going to be dealing with in our future. As we progress as a species, our fiction grows more complicated. It is a thought exercise on a massive societal level of how would we deal with this situation. And, of course, you know, you take it with a grain of salt. A lot of it's entertainment. A lot of it's just, you know, exciting and this, that, and the other. But there are some incredible... works of film and cinema out there that actually do explore what may be in store for humanity in terms of exploring space, exploring ourselves, the genome, etc. So there is a real function to creativity when it comes to that, to share experiences, to teach, to expand our minds, and then it's also to, I think, be understood in the sense of you want somebody to know who you are, and in a way that can't simply be said, that can't be simply be written down. You want to show an element of how you think and how you see the world in artistic expression. But, well, I could ramble on for a while. Do you have anything to add, Dr.?
Well, you know, Matt is saying in the chat that he said, regarding abstract art and abstraction in itself, it's looking for a connection to the unconscious through conscious creation. That's like bingo. Mm-hmm. It's internal. There's an internal connection to solutions rather than external. Now, I see, I think that way, Matt. So it's like, who am I? And what is my mind is creating something and getting in touch with my super consciousness, my higher consciousness, but that we are in a physical body, so you want to create something that reflects that. You know, there's and looking for those, as he says, solutions, but really I think it's an exploration. You know, it's we're always exploring who we are. And, you know, why we're here, you know, all those other questions.
Well,
so
I was just going to say, and it gets back to the most interesting question you can ask is one that doesn't have an answer. And so many things in our life that we have to deal with, they just don't have answers. And how do you deal with that? How do you go through life? How do you make sense of it when so much doesn't make sense?
Well, I think we're basically far away from really looking for these, you know, what is the human drive. And this way, I think we have to tap into and talk about a lot of people do it for ego. There's no real reason except to compete. You know, there's that need to satisfy power. You know, it's a very external expression to create. And so I think that there are people come at creating from a not such a conscious, if I can say conscious motivation, rather an unconscious need. You know, where you get to, you know, I have to do this. And then tapping into all these other sources to put ingredients together to create something that people will buy, you know. There's, and how to market that. And there's this whole selling of something. And that, you got to say, though, that in itself is a creation. Like, the internet's a creation. The, you know, which, you know, what company is online competing with another company, you know, and how did Google start? You know, those things, it's how do you tap into the masses? And it's a different kind of, I think, creativity with a different motivation. We can see it. I can see it philosophically to say we're technologically advancing. But what motivates that one guy, you know, to try to compete with Facebook? You know, like, I can come up with a better one than that. And so then getting into, well, do you know how to do coding? Do you know how to do this? And so using skills and tapping into skills to create something for a competitive nature, if I can say. So, I mean, there is this existential way to look at it. And yet there's this other hardcore intellectual way to look at it. Both are creative and imaginative, but for different motivations.
Well, absolutely. And different individuals will have different motivations. Because in the infinite possibility of existence, anything is possible. And in massive diversity of humanity, we'll have... and then by which I mean of different types of personality within any random sampling of people, you're just going to have people that are drawn to things for different reasons. Some people are going to be drawn to a creative endeavor... just to try to show off or set themselves apart or, you know, find a significant other or something along those lines, you know. It's just some people are only in it for the money, and that's what they want. But
well, here's the flip side. What happens then when you fail at fully expressing that creativity? See, this is the other side. It's ego that gets frustrated, right? I mean, it's not, we very rarely say, well, you know, on my journey, at least I measured that to some degree of success. You know, I did an effort, and it, you don't often do that. You say, you know, I failed at it again, you know, and so we beat ourselves up when we can't create what's in our minds to create. And that's interesting to me how that element of ego always enters this human equation. So I really believe our soul doesn't feel that way. It's only those human ingredients that start to create some antagonism that can deflate or discourage and, you know, so on.
You know, it's funny. I've always had the feeling that things like ego and pride and things like that come more from the soul than from the human body, the animal that we are.
Did you?
Well, that's just always how I thought about it. Cause, I don't know. I've seen several cats in my time that I'm pretty sure have a pretty healthy ego on them. And, and as we were talking about earlier, when it comes to is creativity only a human trait, and we agree it's not. I don't think that, I don't think that anything that a human being experiences can't in some fashion, in some way, be felt by something else. And I think that when it comes to humanity, and it comes to our ability to communicate and our intelligence, we ultimately run the full spectrum of nature in a lot of ways. And when it comes to the natural world, oftentimes, you won't find anything as good as the best of us, human beings, and likewise, you often won't find anything as bad or terrible as the worst of us, the worst of the human beings, the cruelty that we've inflicted. It's, you know, I don't know if you can say it's balanced out, but human beings do express the full spectrum of what can be shown in nature in terms of great kindness, joy, mercy, wanting to share love and build and create wondrous things, and the ability to destroy. But I don't think it's I don't think that's unique to our species, to us. I think it's because of our awareness, of our intelligence, that we're able to express that. Just like with creativity, I think it's because of our intelligence, our awareness, that we have the tools, Dr. Hunter, like you had pointed out earlier, we have those tools to express that. We have the awareness to see the world as it is and to see how it could be. Because we can think in the abstract of what is not real. We can see a possible future that could be if we build towards it. And I think it's common to say that each generation is up against the most severe events of our times, right? You know, it's never been as dramatic or as imperative as it is now. Well, the truth is that every generation has to make its decision about who we're going to be as a species and if we're going to be the best of us, if we're going to create and we're going to build and we're going to build towards a better world, or if we're going to be destructive.
Yeah, I think that may be on a collective level, but each of us also at a very personal level has to ask ourselves, who am I today and how am I being creative? So that takes us into probably for this evening's talk is this next stage of how can we each look at ourselves and see the creativity? Have you looked at solutions for a problem, which is creativity? Have you looked at your life differently, or are you feeling a freedom to express yourself? And if not, can you find another way to express your thoughts and your feelings? And I think at an individual level, anybody who's listening in the chat or in the archives later, is to ask yourself, where are you in your creative expression as an individual? And of course, yes, how are you, contributing to your family and your community and so on. I think we all like to believe we're doing that and, check in with ourselves from time to time. But it's in daily life. You know, is this a 9-to-5 job and it's humdrum and everything, or, you're feeling frustrated, maybe you need to create. You know, Audra was sharing a story in the chat that her mom started painting in her 50s. And she always thought she couldn't draw or paint or do anything. And then suddenly one day, and now she's got it everywhere. See, you don't know. I have another friend who did that. Not an artistic thought in her head, but one day she started doing pencil drawings that floored me. She's so good at it. And then it just took off. All this other art that she's doing. So I think that's an evolutionary thing, whether that's, I love art. I do it all the time. It's my sanity, to be honest. I am quite introverted that way, and I like alone, quiet time. And I love to really challenge myself to see what I can do. And of course, sometimes I think, oh, it's one of those things that requires practice, but because it doesn't just pour out like I envisioned it would. But I like that. But I think even in daily life, whether it's relationship issues and being creative to think of other possibilities when you face challenges, or it's different ways to challenge your creative thinking, because we all have that in us. I have to laugh, and a couple of people are commenting on it. Greg says, is creative genius an oxymoron? That's a good point. I love that. That's Good question.
Well, I think one of the ultimate truths of the universe is that paradoxes do exist, and things that contradict mm-hmm. each other do exist.
Yeah, they do.
Does that not make existence somewhat of an oxymoron?
I guess it does. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Well,
I think it's a really stimulating conversation tonight. There's so many ways we can take it, and it's just good for us once in a while to, you know, sit and do something, like have this conversation that is really contemplative, because there is no answer, obviously. But it does stimulate us to think about who we are, what we're doing, our expression, you know, and how we're manifesting that, you know, in life. So,
well, absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of what we've been talking about tonight, too, is that if you feel an emptiness in that sense that you don't have meaning, you don't feel meaning or purpose, then look to a bit of creativity, just like you were saying. And it doesn't have to be, you know, visual art or literary art. It can be creating, maybe you want to build something. Maybe you want to just work on a project. Philosophy, ideas, these are creations as well.
Mechanics.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
If you take apart the toaster, trying to put it back together might be another challenge. Actually, my son did that as a child. I come home and the radio's taken apart. I lost more appliances that way because he never could put them back together. He just wanted to know how they all were put together and how they worked. So, you know, we're going to do something. Last week mm-hmm. was the U.S. Thanksgiving, and we took the week off. But week before that, we had talked about when we draw cards tonight from our inner oracle self-discovery cards, that I'd like to do kind of an observing, if I may, and use everybody as guinea pigs. But it's also my way because it's comfort for me is – tonight, Michael is going to draw a card for someone, and then I'm going to pull a tarot card as the supporting card, and we'll see how that energy resonates. So,
I think it's
anybody
going
to
be
on?
Yeah. Very interesting.
Anybody on board for that? Put your name in there. I see that we do have Matt, Audra, and Edward. Nice to see you all here, by the way. So maybe we. Get started. By the way, I really have appreciated tonight's talk, Michael. I have. It's a good one.
I think so. It's has so many branches, and you know, you and I can have a good long conversation, and I reckon we probably will for a while after this too. But
well, and to be honest, everybody, before the show, we were talking about Pulp Fiction. So talk about the array of topics. It's all over the place usually.
And interesting. Well, yeah. Let's talk about some of that, you know, pop culture
right
and Pulp Fiction too.
Yeah. All right, shall we start with Dr. Matt? Michael,
yeah, absolutely.
Pull a card for Dr. Matt, please.
And for Dr. Matt, the first card I pulled, which is number 15, belief system knowledge base.
Okay.
This one's come up a couple of times recently too. We each operate life from an existing belief system, and sometimes the solution or direction lies outside of our belief system. Equally, when knowledge is expanded, a belief system calls for revision. Consider that opening the mind for more information and knowledge may be required, subsequently adjusting a belief system. Know that the knowledge you seek is within.
Well, Dr. Matt, I know he was mentioning he's taken my tarot courses with IMHS, too. That's awesome. With 15 belief systems and knowledge base, in support of that, Page of Pentacles. Now, keep in mind that, you know, the tarot, at least the minor arcana, compares to a regular playing card minus the page. The page is that, what we call, I call the communicator between the minor and major arcana to make up the 78 cards. So if I'm talking about a regular deck, and you'll often hear me refer to the suits in that way, this would be the page of diamonds. The page of diamonds, the page of pentacles. And generally, as that support, the communicator, the bridge, I'm going to say that perhaps there's a little inventory being taken, Matt, about finances, your belief in finances, your belief in material things like acquisition. So it doesn't have to specifically be money, but it could be that related. It could be a job. It could be, you know, wanting to ask for a raise or promotion in kind of in that way. So that's how I see that as a support. A support card. So, Matt's saying, awesome, the messenger of the earth element. Yes, it is. And that's what the diamonds are. So it's perfect for his situation with card 15. See, I'm very really glad to hear that. Thank you, Matt, for the feedback. Well, now we have Audra next, Michael. So let's move on. See you.
All right. And this is going to be interesting. We have wild card number 4, Unknowable. Mm.
Oh, I love that card. I do.
It's a good one. All right. There are mysteries in the universe, and not all can be known or predicted. A focus of deliberate intent can reveal valuable, unforeseen knowledge for what lay ahead. Remember, we only see what we know and believe. The universe is unfolding in ways that are unknowable to your existing ways of thinking. Change your mind and you change your world. Change your mind and what was once unknowable may now be knowable. Listen to the subtle leadings and inclinations of your higher self. What was once unknowable is now knowable. Remain flexible and open to change.
I like it. It's one of my favorite cards in the inner oracle deck, to be honest, because anything's possible. But your tarot support to that, Audra, is the Ace of Hearts. So in tarot language, it's the Ace of Cups. In card language, the Ace of Hearts. So think of it as fulfillment, you know, and what fulfills you. We had a great conversation tonight about creativity. So it's anything from the heart. Yes, it can absolutely have to do with relationships. But I tend to think sometimes it's love isn't just about relationships outside the self. It's the relationship with the self. So it is in that unknowable, you're exploring different parts of your heart, how you feel. There's always boundaries in the world, of course, but it what makes you feel love? And enjoyment and pleasure. So again, that Ace of Hearts, boy, that's the fulfillment of the heart. So I love that. It's great.
I'm really liking this so far.
Yeah, I am too. Dr. Edward is next. Let's see.
All right. And Dr. Edward, I have number 20, Deliberate Intent. The simple act of intention registers your wants and desires with the universal consciousness, which then sets energy in motion for their attainment. Deliberate intent is focusing your intent like a laser, causing you to become entangled with whatever it is you desire. It's not magic, it requires effort. Focus on what you want, not on what you don't have. Release with patience. Right, very interesting card, and
I'm sorry, I had my mute button on, Michael. My apologies, a little delay.
No worries.
20, Deliberate Intent, Edward, is supported by the tarot with the 8 of clubs. Now, the 8 of clubs very often means something that happens very quickly. Things that happen very fast. The negative to that is being hasty or too quick. The other, is it's time to take quick action, if that makes sense. So the Eight of Clubs is maybe in this deliberate intent is watching your timing. Maybe slow down in a couple things and then know when to take opportunity in another. That's how I'm reading that. So if that helps. It's an interesting one.
Very interesting.
Yeah. All right. We have Venicio.
All right.
Is next, I think. I have the order.
I believe so. I'm actually just scrolling through myself too, but I believe so. And Venicio, I have number 24, Truth.
All right.
There are many ways to discover cosmic truth. It begins with knowing who you are and why you are who you are. This is your truth. Discovering cosmic truth involves further discovering the truths that are often concealed within a relationship or a life situation. Yet, the only truths kept secret are those we will not see. This is a time of deep introspection to intuitively gauge the way ahead. This card may indicate that there is truth in something or in a direction.
Well, Venetia, what is supporting the tarot support to that truth is the Six of Hearts, or Six of Clubs, or Cups, sorry. And I see that as service, family, community, relationships, commitments. It's what is in your immediate sphere of influence where you can feel a sense of value and contribution. If that helps, because that's what I'm saying, it's this fulfillment of yourself outside the self, and how you feel. I go back to that word value and who you're bonding with outside yourself that you can really feel good and get creative, and feel like you're a part of something. I think that's what it's encouraging you to do. So I hope that makes sense to you. Oh, Greg. Greg's in the chat saying, pull a card for yourself, and Michael, do the same. But before we do that, I'm happy to do that. But Audra made a comment that this is the second or third time that we have pulled that number four, unknowable, in the last couple of months.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that as well. It's always so fascinating when that happens, because we couldn't even do it on purpose, because I only keep the the record of whose cards are whose that one evening, and then I start over the next week. So I wouldn't even have known that to do it on purpose. So the fact that it's coming up randomly, it's very interesting.
And
Dr. Edward as well, I think he had a card that kept coming up, if I can. I can't recall quite off the top of my head which it was, but I remember in this back-to-back, it came up on a couple of occasions. Very interesting when that happens.
We've had really good feedback in the chat, and thanks, Venicio, for saying that, and everyone else. I know Matt, Audra, and Edward have all mentioned that they can relate, and that's good feedback for us, because I am observing, again, this. I'm sensing here where there's kind of where the inner oracle cards would be existential in a way, self-reflective. Much like the Viking runes, if I can make that comparison, then the tarot is a little bit more organic or specific. So those two together, I see a really good harmony. So that's just for me. Michael, I'm going to pull one tarot card for you. I have the Eight of Pentacles, a.k.a. Eight of Diamonds. I love that card. It is, again, I know they're all my favorites, but it's, in a word, I call that the apprenticeship card. It's that learning on the job, learning as you're going. Eight, I know a lot of people feel like eight is that power authority number, you know, but in order to have any kind of power or any kind of authority, you have education. Education is the root to that number eight vibration. So that you're learning, that you're studying, and you're applying yourself, and that there's Something coming. That's what, of course, now I'm going by my intuition when I pull that. Like, there is something coming where you're really going to be able to learn as you go. So it's not like you have to drop everything and dive into something new. It's this slow application, and I get little, the hair on my arm stands up. It's exciting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So if you pull an inner oracle card, then I will pull the tarot card for myself. We'll kind of see how that goes.
All right. So let's see.
I'll
pull an inner oracle for myself real quick, too. And
yes, please. I have those cards here, and I thought, I could do it for you.
You want to?
Yeah, I'll do it right now. Empowerment. Kid you not.
All right.
That's number 9. You probably have your... I got my book right here, Michael. Don't go away. You're not going
I'm not going anywhere.
So taking your power back is literally all-powerful and absolutely priceless. It alone is the solution, in principle, for virtually every problematic circumstance in your life, from a bad relationship to spiritual harassment. Retaining your power means to retain your wholeness. When you're whole, you're empowered. Empower others by doing no harm, doing right. Sharing the best of yourself is encouraging and uplifting to yourself and others. So when I then pull that 8 of diamonds, there's a really good support. So it's like you're empowered to learn and grow and build something.
Well, I already know exactly what it means.
All right.
It is strange how it resonates.
Awesome.
Yeah, it kind of clicked as soon as I kind of heard it. All right. So this is good times.
Exciting.
Good times. Yeah. All right. So I can't pull a tarot card for you, Dr. Hunter, but I am going to pull an oracle card.
All right.
And I have, I love it, wild card number 5, don't hate.
Oh, sure.
I know how much you like to hate, but don't hate. I kid, of course. A low energy signature refuses to learn more in order to better accept and understand others. Hate grows in this low frequency. The result is fear, demonstrated as the need to criticize and control others. This is how wars begin, whether it's in relationships, within families, or between countries. Understanding does not mean one has to agree. It means rising above the low frequency to do no harm, do right, to self and others.
Okay, I have a confession.
All right.
So, you know, I pull the 4 of diamonds here, the 4 of pentacles, which is also the, it can be miserly. It can be to do with finances, et cetera. So that don't hate thing. I had a really wonderful part-time job this year. The manager had awful temper tantrums and was a bully, and I walked out. I just said, no, I'm not doing this. So, you know, so I'm looking for other things to do. I have my own business. I have, you know, things, but I want to add to that. And, you know, I'm just challenging myself and being creative. But there is that, you know, when you've been through a little bit of a blip, you get kind of, I got other words for it, but so that, you know, don't hate. It's very difficult to not loathe or detest bad behavior. I mean, I was very quiet about it. I didn't say anything about it. I did ask him, please don't talk to me that way. And he just kept ranting anyway. And I got my coat and I left, because there's no, you can't feed that kind of stuff. But I think it's natural to kind of harbor a little bit of resentment.
Well,
you know,
I think
you really like the job.
I think you can loathe and detest something or someone without necessarily hating them.
Yeah.
But then again, that's an interesting thing in and of itself. This kind of goes back to my earlier statement wherein I said verbal language can at times be, I think I used primitive, but clumsy. Let's put it clumsy. Because everybody has a slightly different definition for a word than everybody else. It means something just a little bit different to them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I kind of take hate and I view it as something of a, It has a bit more of an aggressive energy to it. It's active. You know, you hate something. It's got such an energy to it. I detest mosquitoes. I don't know if I'd say I hate them. I get it. They're here. They're fighting for survival.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Wong, I thank you for saying that, Dr. Edward. What a good feeling it is, and you have the luxury of walking out of a toxic environment. It's not really a luxury. I mean, because we all, like, here's the toss-up. I really like the job. I love the other people. And so it's okay. There's the love of this environment and these people, and yet I like the income. And it's not a luxury to walk out, but what it is my autonomy to walk out. Mm-hmm. I will not be held hostage. That I made that decision at a very young age, and it's not to say I haven't zigged when I should have zagged and found myself in, you know, difficult situations over the years. But there's the one thing I won't do is be battered. I will not be subject, and I don't tolerate it when I see it. And it's difficult, so I don't. It's just knowing that keeping my integrity intact, I'm not going to feed this energy. I have done, you know, other things within good conscience to deflect, you know, avoid, you know, redirect it. It ain't working. So, and then it's a direct hit, a couple of times of a direct hit, and you say, okay, that's it. Yeah. Audra's sharing that she went through a similar thing. So she decided that it was time for her to go also. You know what? People don't leave good jobs. They leave bad managers.
Very true.
And that's the bottom line. It's you don't leave good jobs.
So. Well, and – oh, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I'll just say, yeah, and Audra's just adding that she didn't really have a luxury either. She just knew that when she had kind of, depleted everything, it was just time to go. But, you know, here's the thing. The flip side is that we get really creative, and it forces us to think in new ways and to tap into different kinds of energy. And, it's like we were talking about earlier tonight, Michael, is to get creative. So it's there we go. So,
well, and I think I'll just kind of wrap up by saying to this point, well, I am still struggling with how to best manage a toxic situation. I am in that cognitive dissonance between, well, not knowing what to do in that moment of these things, and you deal with it the best you can. But I will say, to your point, it wasn't a luxury. It was the fact that no amount of money is worth it for somebody to treat you like that, to cross those boundaries and things like that.
Well, we also don't want to shoot ourselves in the foot. I mean, I am resourceful.
No.
I mean, if I, I was 30 years old and 29 years old, and I had to leave a very abusive relationship with two little kids. And there's, what's it going to be? The pain of somebody else or the pain of my own creations, you know? And that's really the choice sometimes. But when it comes to a job, it's like you need this for an income and you're absolutely reliant on it. The best thing to do then is to look for other things and get a different job before you leave this one. It's always harder to get a job when you don't have one, right?
True enough.
So,
but and it's I think in your case, it's not like it happened at the drop of a hat. It was leading up to it, and it had kind of been I digress.
Well, I don't know if there's any right way to handle these things, except one day we all kind of snap inside and say, this is enough. That's enough.
Don't push too far.
The sad thing in the real world is that there's always somebody else there to get hired and give it a try. And, you know, they carry on. But I think this is our way of standing up to it. You know, actually, Cecilia said she had to do that too, becoming to start her own business. And Audra said, that's great. So, yeah, sometimes that's what it takes. You get your own business going. So everybody is different.
You create. She created her own opportunity, and I think that you're going to be creative and finding what's next. Because life is finite, and we have to live it for ourselves, not anybody else. And let's be creative, all of us, about how we live our lives. What are we building? What are we working towards? What are we creating on a daily basis? Because inaction creates things, too. So,
I think this is... Before we go, Dr. Edward says, and then that question comes up in the interview for the prospective job. Why are you leaving your current job? I would just say, because I heard this one is open, and I really have wanted to work here for a long time.
Perfect.
Make them more important. They love that.
Well, it has been a very interesting discussion tonight. I really very much enjoyed how you were able to combine the tarot with our inner oracle. I think it had some interesting messages. And next week, Dr. Kelly will be joining us.
Awesome.
We have a segment yet to be announced, but that'll be coming via email. And then we will have one more week after that on the 18th, I believe. We're going to have our final, December broadcast. The week after is Christmas, and the week after that's New Year's. So, we're going to be taking just a 2-week break at the end of the month and be back right after the New Year. Back in 2020.
On the 18th, when we come back, we'll do this tarot inner oracle combination again. And maybe say a few words about that upcoming Yuletide solstice.
I love it. You read my mind.
There we go.
And that's exactly what I was thinking as well. So I think we know what we're going to be talking about on the 18th. And next week we're going to be joined by Dr. Kelly.
Awesome.
And we're going to have a great topic that we're going to be announcing. We have a couple of things we're going back and forth on. So, as always, thank you for joining us, because we're also creating something here tonight. We're creating this community of people exploring metaphysics, exploring our reality. And I'm looking forward to everybody joining us next week, too. So until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone. See you next week.